welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Syke.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech. Well, Perry's there somewhere. I can't hear him.
Hello. Good morning. Perry's right here.
There he is. Well, you're sleeping? You just couldn't get in the studio enough.
What am I here for? Oh, that's right. Radio. Radio's going to go. There we go. The clock never stops, does it?
Hey, when we look back over time, I'm going to kind of put you on, if I haven't already put you on the spot, I got one more question for you. When we look back over history, we look at decades and sometimes years, and we say, well, that was a decade of, and we have a theme for it. If you're looking at 2020, which I know isn't quite over, but we're getting close, what would you come up with as a theme for 2020?
2020, unprecedented.
Well, that's a good one.
You hear that a lot this year, yes.
I was thinking of a little shorter word, messy.
Definitely applies also.
It's messy economically, politically, culturally, monetarily. The audience does not get my daily emails that I send out to financial advisors around the country. But one of the things I have said repeatedly is we should get, for those of us who took finance classes in college, we should get a refund of our tuition and book fee, because all the theory that we were told undermines the financial markets is out the window.
it really is. There are so many metrics that we've been told for years and economists still hang on to dearly. Here's what happens if this gets out of whack. Here's what's going to happen if this lever gets pushed in the economy, and none of it's holding true this year.
Well, we speak regularly about the flaws of modern portfolio theory, because it was never intended to be used the way the financial services industry uses it. But certainly this is a year where that theory has lost its meaning. And many on Wall Street are beginning to figure out, you know, this really doesn't make any sense. We've got to figure out some better way to manage our portfolios. But let's just quickly, I got 8 items here that we never would have expected were going to happen in the past 12 months. We've had a bubbling stock market, booming economy with record unemployment. We've had a pandemic. We took our booming economy and we said, enough of that. Let's just close the door. Shut it down.
Shut it down.
The Bill of Rights. You know, we built this, we didn't, but our forefathers built this country on the assumption that there are unalienable rights granted by God, and they are codified in our Bill of Rights, but we effectively suspended everybody, saying, you can't go there, you can't do that, and you can't see them. We've had the fastest 30% decline in the stock market in history, and we've had the Federal Reserve step in to backstop the entire financial system, buying multiple asset classes for the first time in history that are not part of their mandate, by creating special situation vehicles. It's kind of like Pepsi saying, we're in the drink business, but if we buy Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, and KFC, we can be in the food business too. You know, it's kind of related, isn't it? That's kind of what the Fed has done. If we buy mortgages, that's money, and we're in the money business. If we buy student loans, that's money. Well, why can't we buy that? How about auto loans? Yeah, they've even been buying auto loans, printing over $3 trillion in less than 6 months. And then we had riots, rampant civil unrest, which, living here in the Seattle area, we know a lot about.
Firsthand, yep.
26 cities going up in flames, attempting to create civil insurrection, and I think maybe intended to create civil war. And then we are still in the midst of a contested presidential election, which looks like it is wrapping up. But we have 2.5 weeks to go before we can actually say, let's put a theme on this.
It's been a wild one. Been a wild one. And I think everyone has stopped saying a couple of things. Well, this couldn't get any worse because things. Then we find
really?
the next leg down. And then, well, nothing else will happen this year. I think we're done for this year. And it's just keeps on rolling. It's unreal.
One of the things that we have had frequent questions about is, with all this money printing, why don't we have inflation? Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't had inflation because the money hasn't hit the economy. Now, the argument back in the aftermath of 08 and 09 was quantitative easing was necessary to keep the banks afloat. Well, some of those banks maybe should have been allowed to go into bankruptcy and get reorganized, but we wouldn't want that to sully the names of big Wall Street firms or our friends at the cocktail parties. So we didn't do that. But that money actually never got into the economy. The quantitative easing money went to the big banks, and they have used it in the stock market. And we have a phenomenal stock market rally over the last 10 years. But money in the economy has been hard to find because actual inflation requires expanding money supply, and that comes from banks lending freely, and they have not been. But I think that's about ready to change because even the Fed has said, we've reported this before, that they're pretty much out of options and they're looking to Congress to create some more money for the economy. And Newsweek recently had an article about this issue where Chairman Powell has repeatedly called for Congress to provide for more financial assistance directly to Americans. Quote, fiscal policy can do what we can't, which is to replace lost incomes for people who are out of work through no fault of their own, end quote. To quote him again a little later on, he said, this is absolutely essential. So hopefully the next time Congress goes out and decides to borrow money from whoever they can find it, they'll actually put the money in our hands some way where it does the economy some good. And therein lies the inflation trap that we have expected would occur all this last decade, and it hasn't there. But I think we are about ready to see that happen, and it's going to complicate lots of stuff.
It does make things harder. It's just one more thing to keep an eye on. If the inflation factor finally does begin to tick up, it's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on. But the Fed's already said if the economy begins to run a little hot, as they put it, we're going to let it run a little hot for a while because it's been so flat for so long on the inflation front.
Well, and if you were on our webinar this last weekend, one of the things I showed you at the end was that the commodity indicator that we track, which tracks softs, so it's agricultural stuff, and basically it's food products. And if you go in and start looking for some additional data, some additional charts, what we find is food prices, and the components anyway, are starting to rise. They have broken out of a 10-year downtrend, and they're starting to creep up. They just take a little while to show up in the grocery store, and we're thinking, well, price increases, shortages because of the supply chain problems and just the mess that we're in. But I think the problem's actually coming up at a lower level and is going to become more endemic. But one of the things that is really in trouble is, and you know this, Social Security is not so secure.
it's in its current state. Yeah, it's not going to make it. We're going to have to have some changes made to it. And it seems that Congress, as usual, is not going to do anything until it's on fire even more than it is right now.
Well, it's called the third rail, because on an electric train, you don't want to touch the third rail, you're dead. And then, so if you mess with Social Security, you don't get reelected. And it is expected to run dry by the mid-2030s. That's based on a steadily growing economy and tax money flowing into the trust fund.
Uh-huh.
This year, that's been difficult to achieve. I think
not quite the same. Yeah.
The models need significant revision. Unemployment is almost twice what it was start of the year. And while there's some money coming in, it's not flowing in as rapidly, which means that trust fund's going to run out of cash a little bit earlier. Even if it runs out of cash, the fact that there are tax revenues coming in on just because people are still working means it gets about 75% of what's necessary to make payments. So it's not going to go away. But if they don't raise taxes or they can't get phenomenal economic growth, benefits are going to be cut. Maybe not for current beneficiaries, but those of you who are still working, if you're probably 15, 20 years away from Social Security, my guess is it's my opinion. We are way overdue for changing eligibility for Social Security. If we use the same rate of mortality that was used when it was begun back in the 30s, then full retirement age today would be mid-70s, about 10 years later than it presently exists.
Canada, sure. Almost no one actually got Social Security. And when the program was initiated, they were anticipating that not many people were ever going to actually be on it for any amount of time. But with the longevity that people find these days, that is just not the case. You can, you know, take it at 62 and live to 102, and you wouldn't be that far out of the norm there.
That's true. If you want to talk to us, we do have a phone number that has an open line. Didn't mention that at the beginning. It's 888-312-5757. With that,
we are right up against our first break here of the morning. We'd like to remind everyone that if you're not getting our Week in Review, which is our weekly email newsletter about stuff going on out there in the world of finance and investing, you can sign up for that at iriradio.com. Just go to iriradio. You need to send us an email. I'm giving you the wrong thing here. You need to send us an email. Send an email to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. We need your first and last name. And just put Week in Review in the subject line. And that goes out most Mondays, and you will begin receiving it this Monday if you send us an email this weekend. If you have questions this morning, give us a call at 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Or email your question to help@iriradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing. Well, it is Christmas season, so Merry Christmas to one and all.
Indeed.
And whatever way you can, I hope you spend some time with your family. But obviously, if you have health issues at risk, then you have to be extra careful about what you do. Most of the time when we get sick, we just go home and stay in bed until we get over it. I mean, that's what we did last year with the flu, and the year before that, and the year before that, and the year before that, and the year okay. Well, we went to break. We're talking about Social Security. It's pretty well wrapping up that subject, but there is one issue, and that is Congress looking at this potential significant reduction in benefits would certainly step up to the plate and do something about the lack of revenue, wouldn't they?
Yeah,
they've only known this problem's coming for about the last 40 years, and, and they're still waiting for another round of new congressmen to take the take responsibility
Let
for it.
Let somebody else handle that. That's right.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about Medicare, but before we do that, we have Philip from Milton with a Social Security question. So, Philip, glad to have you out there, and Merry Christmas to you. You are on the air in KVI country. Philip.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Gentlemen, I'm 81 years old, okay?
Very good.
I just want to pass on some information to you. In the early 1960s, I went to a meeting, and the fellow from Social Security was there, and he explained, okay? Then he said, there's so much money in Social Security, and all the interest and everything else, they have so much money, they'll never run out. But our Congress would borrow money from Social Security for this new project and another one. They were all loans. And they've done this over the years and years, and that's why they've never paid any of this back from all of these things that they've done. And that's why there is an insufficient amount coming in going to be to pay Social Security. It is our Congress that has never paid back all of these loans from all of these new things that they've put it into. So I just wanted to pass that on to you good people.
Well, thank you, Philip. You are absolutely right. We have a profligate Congress. And unfortunately, the people who are beneficiaries of their profligacy are the taxpayers who say, I like the extra money they're giving me, and I'm going to vote that guy back in so he can do it again. But you're absolutely right. That is the problem. There is no discipline in Congress. Thanks for the call, Philip. We appreciate having you out there. Let's move on to Medicare here, because it's actually a bigger problem than Social Security. We do have Medicare taxes, which are coming in, and the current committee that oversees this estimated before the pandemic that the money for Medicare would run dry by 2026. And they point out this does not include the pandemic. So obviously this year we have made heavy demands upon the system. Less money coming in, more money going out. You know how that works at the household budget,
what
right?
Happens. Yeah. That brick wall we're heading for just got closer.
And so it's actually now adjusted to somewhere between 2022 and 2024. That happens to be very, very close. And as if that's not bad enough, it looks like we are going to have a new president who thinks that everybody should be covered under Medicare. And this Congress, as Philip just pointed out, Congress spends money out of different buckets without thinking about the impact on it. This year, they took $60 billion out of the Medicare trust to pay for the CARES Act, which just means the Medicare fund is depleted that much faster. And everybody celebrated the CARES Act because it was a response to the pandemic. And it's kind of like, well, this is just a temporary fix. We'll fix it later. Congress doesn't know what later means.
There's always more later. Just kick that can down the road. And that's what they keep trying to do. But we're, especially with Medicare, we really are coming up to not having funding. And the current structure is just not going to get it done. So they're going to actually have to make some decisions here and do some things. And that's going to be big news when they try to restructure that.
Well, and Biden's plan is to lower the eligibility age from 65 to 60. And if you are getting health care benefits from a pension plan, the pension trustees are going to be very supportive of that.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's going to remove a huge amount of cost from the pension, cost which they do not have money to pay. The pension system in our country is grossly underfunded. I will give credit to the state of Washington trustees that run the state board. They are one of the, I think they're the second best funded pension system, state pension system in the country. They have done a good job. But generally, if you're looking at private pensions and most other state pensions, they're never supposed to be 100% funded because they are indefinite payout periods as people live very long times and they continue to collect money as younger people come in and work. So it's a cash flow, cash in, cash out. You never expect 100% funding. But when you're 50% or 40%, the pension's not going to survive. So this is a problem which is going to result in higher taxes. Yeah, we just raise taxes. We raise taxes and taxes until the economy doesn't work.
Because when they move those people off of their private pension plans and they put them in Medicare, all that means is we taxpayers are going to pay the bill, and Medicare is completely underfunded also. So there's no money in that plan for the new people that they're going to try to push in there. So that the whole funding mechanism is going to have to change. And like you said, Don, there's almost no chance that taxes aren't going up there.
Yeah, so this area is called Other Post-Employment Benefits, OPEB, and state OPEB funds are roughly underfunded by, $1 trillion. But in government think, what's a trillion here and trillion there?
It's nowhere near as much as it used to be. That used to be real money, but now it's just, we can print that, no problem. So
healthcare costs are escalating, and we know that just from this year, but as people get older, they have more health issues, and we survive a longer period of time. But the public health care option is not going to solve this problem. It's actually going to make it worse. It's going to reduce available services and extend access to care, particularly critical care. And we've seen that happen this year.
Sure.
If you want to register for our next stock market update, it is time to do so. Many of you already have. I was watching I took a peek at the pre-registration list before the show started. Just go to our website, iriradio.com is the shortcut. In the lower left-hand corner, it says webinars, and a couple clicks in your email, and you can get registered for the next one, which will be the first Saturday of the month, as long as it's not a holiday. And I don't remember the exact date, but it doesn't matter. It's the first Saturday. You'll find it when you get there, iriradio.com. Lower left-hand corner, couple of clicks and email, and you will be set for our analysis of what we're looking at as we move into the next year. Hopefully, it's an easier one than this one. One of the things that's turned out to be a lot easier than anybody ever expected is I can do my job in my pajamas because I don't have to get dressed to go to work anymore.
Yes, work from home, that has become a major theme with so many companies unable to occupy all of their office space and finding out that, you know what? The work from home thing really is working out well for the majority of companies that are doing it. And it's looking more and more like even after the pandemic, even after the vaccine is widely available, it looks like a lot of people are not going to be going back to the office because this has been working so well. It's lowered costs. It's increased productivity. And it's forced companies to just give it a whirl. It got the inertia out of the way of, we've always done it this way. That's the way we're always going to do it. Well, that had to get changed. And now once it did, it looks like the work from home move is going to be significant and long term.
Many, many people are enjoying working from home. I did see one post where somebody was complaining. They pointed out that Hugh Hefner became a millionaire working in his pajamas, and so far it hasn't been working out so well for the person. Still in the pajamas,
no,
but the million hasn't shown up.
Yeah, all I got was the PJs. No big check. Yeah, well, I can understand their frustration there. So,
well, we have technology which has made this possible. I mean, if you just think about this. 10, 20 years ago, working. What do you mean work from home? Well, okay. So I'm an outside salesman. I get out of the house and I go out. So I'm, you know, I have a home office, but you have people from IBM and Microsoft and, I mean, all sorts of businesses who are just online.
Yep.
We're online with new clients. And we used to meet face to face, and now we're meeting face to face on the computer monitor.
And this people don't have a big issue with it anymore. It got pushed as a necessity, but once everybody tried it, it's become much more like, well, that wasn't bad. Everything worked well, and we didn't miss anything here. Everything that we need to cover, we can cover, and I think that's the key.
A big research firm out of Chicago showed that basically we've got about a four-fold increase in the amount of full work days that are going to be done from home even after the pandemic is over. 22% of full work days instead of what used to be five. The time for this has arrived. And as you said, Perry, we've always done it this way was out the window.
Right. Well, needing to keep a close eye on your staff, your employees, is pretty much out the window. Plus, like I said, they're finding so often that they're getting better productivity out of the same group of people. So it's a win-win situation that the employee gets a lot more freedom, and they get rid of their commute, and now they can do their work anywhere they can get online. So their lives have become significantly more flexible, and the company's getting more productivity. So both sides of that coin are working out well, which is why they're saying, you know, even if you had the option to go back, probably a lot of people aren't going to be. It's just going to a significant amount of people who can work out of the office are going to continue to do so. And we are right at the bottom of the hour. Time to get out of here for a break. Again, in January, we're having our regular monthly market update, start the year off right, and take a look at what's going on in the economy and the markets and what you can do to protect some capital out there. Just go to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Go to the webinar page and a couple of clicks and you'll be registered. You're going to get an email back with a link in it. And on Saturday, January 9th, right after the show, you just click that link and you will be live online with us, and you'll be able to see our charts, see what we're talking about, and get a better grip on where the economy is right now. And if you notice, we're not having the year-end forecast for what next year is going to be like, because we have no idea. But in January, we will take a look at what is going on, and that's the critical part. You need to know what's going on now, and we cover that in the webinar, and we always have plenty of time for your questions, so you can get some clarity about anything that you were wondering about specific to your situation, either questions about the economy, the stock markets, or individual securities you'd like to get a second opinion on. We will cover all of that January 9th. Just go to iriradio.com, give it a click, and you'll be registered. If you have questions for us this morning, give us a call at 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Investor Resources. Check out our website at iriradio.com and log on for a free report. That's iriradio.com. Don and Perry are waiting to answer your questions now at 1-888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757.
Well, there's probably not a lot of Christmas hops going on this year.
That's true.
As we were going to the break, we've been talking about this work from home phenomenon, which has really changed things. And it's not only do businesses find that they have some increased productivity, and they're granted there's some people who aren't real happy. They miss the office environment and the water cooler socialization, which is a little more difficult when it's your spouse, you know. That, and you see them all the time.
It's
and
maybe always the same people at the water cooler now. Yeah.
but there's some massive changes going on in the business world, and particularly in the real estate area of the business world, because offices that have been contracted for years by corporations planning on expansion are finding that, one, they don't need that, and they don't even need what they already have. So they are trying to find ways to get out of leases. Of course, landlords don't like that. That is a debate. And the residential real estate, particularly in the big urban cities, San Francisco, New York, and a few of the others, I mean, rents in San Francisco, the major area, have fallen 24, 25, 26%. And that does not include 3 months of free rent. That's just the advertised rent. And then you come in and say, well, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. A deposit? What do you mean I need a deposit? So I don't need a deposit. Yeah, but first and last, now how about the first two and last all free? That'll work too, huh? Okay, I can do that. I'll move in.
Anybody that'll pay the monthly rent is welcome. Yes, whatever we have to do, we're going to try to get you in the door.
Because that makes as long as the advertised rent still looks decent, the bank doesn't worry. You know, the bankers are playing ostrich here. They're trying to avoid being forced into foreclosing on properties when they know there's nobody to buy them anywhere close to the mortgage balance. It's an area that's going to take several years to unwind to much lower real estate prices in these big properties. And along with that are some of the mortgage-backed securities where properties are just simply a single asset backing a mortgage that was securitized in various maturity dates. And they also are at risk of collapsing over the next couple of years as reality sets in. It's one thing that we mentioned recently with Simon Properties letting the Independence Mall in Kansas City go back to the bank. I mean, because they couldn't make, they were not going to be able to make the balloon payment of $200 million. Yeah, you know, small peanuts here, 200. And it sold for less than $25 million in foreclosure. That means the banks, some bank ate $150 million of bad collateral. And that problem is going to become more common over the next several years. These things take time to work out, but that's contracting the money supply. We've got other issues with Congress looking like they're going to try and do things that would expand the money supply, and that money might end up, as a lot of the unemployment did this year, going into the stock market, causing more absolutely phenomenal escalation of prices where there's absolutely no profit involved in the company.
It's pretty amazing. We haven't seen anything like it since the tech bubble, when things were just inflating for no good reason at all. It's not as widespread as it was then, but there are some pricing issues in the market right now where things just don't add up. Like we said, there are so many metrics in the market right now that just are nothing like anyone's ever seen before, and it's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out too in the coming year.
So we've had a number of relatively young companies come to market over the last couple of years. So, you know, one of the things that firefighters want with a forest fire is for snow. And here we have a company called Snowflake. I mean, if anybody said, you know, you're flaky, I know. So anyway, we got Snowflake, and the company stock is on fire. I mean, it's an anomaly here. They are reporting that they've had earnings, and if it compounds for about 20% for the next three quarters, they should be somewhere around $120 billion. And their price-to-sales ratio would be at 140 times.
Which
you will not find that number in any finance test.
That's not supposed to happen. No, that means something's gone badly wrong. But Snowflake is just it's just a juggernaut, and you know it. It's one of those things where, and people are still buying it. It's like, it's an unreasonable price. Yes, it is. Do you want some? Yes, I do. That's the way it's going right now. It's just continually being bid up. And if it comes through, if Snowflake works, Snowflake, it's a huge cloud computing company, and they've got some data storage solutions that are quite innovative and very flexible, very easy to administer, and that's really that's why there's so much interest in it. Everything's going online, and here's a company that specializes in that. And if everything works out, it may be a reasonable price, but right now, boy, it looks very, very expensive.
Well, it's a brand new company, and it doesn't own much. It's already as big as IBM, which has been around for a little while. It's getting close to the size of Oracle. I mean this is just absolutely amazing. And it's not that the people who are buying it are not smart,
right?
But they are assuming just phenomenal growth in sales over the coming years. And the more it grows, the more likely you've got other competitors. How about Microsoft? Microsoft's really been getting pretty good at the cloud business.
They know how to do that. And the pricing for Snowflake, like you said, Don, is looking at a perfect world for them, that there are no hiccups, that everything goes forward at a massive pace and just continues into the future. That's the only way the pricing works. But right now, they have such a dedicated following that the price, it doesn't seem to matter. Price keeps going up, and people keep trying to get more.
So if we just go back a day, we take a look at DoorDash.
There we go.
Yeah. Now, what does DoorDash own? A name? Nothing. They charge they charge restaurants 30% commission for delivering their product. So the shares on DoorDash had just sold in its IPO at $102, which was above the 90-95 range. And the stock opens at 182, giving it a market cap of almost $70 billion.
That's amazing, yeah.
greater than companies like Chubb, Sherwin-Williams, and General Motors, who apparently don't own anything of significant value.
Right, they're not really here for the long haul, you know. And a startup like DoorDash just blasts right by them. Part of that's fueled by the pandemic. Part of that is like, well, this is DoorDash's time. That's what we need right now. Somebody that does delivery, and they already have that all put together. And boy, they are again just exploding on the share value these days.
Well, we don't even have to mention, just in passing, Airbnb, which I don't think owns a single property, but they are valued at more than all of Marriott.
That's amazing, yeah.
Pull out a finance textbook and reread it, and you will be confused.
This stuff is not supposed to be happening. It's not supposed to be able to occur. But that is how unprecedented 2020 has been, and that is how dislocated many things are in the economy and in markets. That's what's happening with so many people being pushed to the sidelines and entire segments of the economy being turned upside down. And we're not done yet. We still have a couple of weeks of 2020 here for some more things to happen. Who knows where we go between now and New Year's Day. We are up against our last break of the morning here. We have a full segment left. If you'd like to get your question in, give us a call at 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. And I'd like to remind everyone, we do have registrations open for our January market update. Just go to iriradio.com. Go to the webinar page, a couple of clicks, and you will receive an email with a link in it. And on Saturday, January 9th, you just click that link, and you will be live online with us. We're going to take a look at what's going on out there in the markets, the economies, and have plenty of time left to get your questions in. Again, if you have a question this morning, we still have a full segment left. Plenty of time. We'd be glad to talk to you. 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We wish you a lot of presents, we wish you a lot of presents, we wish you a lot of presents.
Well, we wish you a lot of presence in the stock market. We hope they continue rolling on. This has been a challenging year from a risk management standpoint. You just basically can say, I don't care about risk. Buy the index and watch my money double. Of course, when it collapses like it did in February and March, I mean, you get a 34% reduction. And just as though this was the fastest significant decline in the market, it's also the fastest recovery for the index. Now, the indices, S&P and the NASDAQ, they're basically reflecting the price of a handful of stocks. Let's say it's just a baker's dozen, possibly. That does not mean the rest of the market has been healthy by any means. We have really been in the start of a bear market 2.5 years ago. Businesses started having difficulty reaching the end of their business cycle. And that has kept many things in a trading range at best, or declining trend lines at worst. While the Fed gives their big favorite bankers money to prop up the appearance of everything healthy by running a handful of stocks up in price in the stock market, and then you get some retail excitement jumping into a lot of things that were on the verge of bankruptcy, and some of which did. But you know, you learn your lesson early, and hopefully you save some capital to go on. And that's our job as we look at our client portfolios, as we recognize, particularly if my comment in the first hour, in the first segment of this hour, was that we're looking at inflation starting to rear its head. That would mean interest rates rise. And rising interest rates can decimate a bond portfolio. And if you are approaching or in retirement and you have a standard portfolio structure, bonds are forced into it. And the older you get, the more they force them into it. And that means the more risk you are taking with the return of inflation and rising rates. You want to deal with that. We do that, and we'll be glad to spend some time with you individually on how we deal with that. You just send us an email, help@iriradio.com, or give us a call at 800-317-9119. We'll be glad to set up some one-on-one time with you and discuss those issues. One of the absolutely amazing things people have been waiting for is Tesla to become part of the S&P 500. Expected a couple of months ago, and it's now happening.
Coming on, yep.
So it went public in 2010. It was the first U.S. car company to do an initial public offering on the market since Ford went public in 1956.
How about that? That's amazing. That first car company to go public since 56. That's amazing.
I didn't know that. I mean, that Ford, you know, I assumed Ford had been on the market since Henry was alive, but apparently not. Anyway, it's going to be a larger factor in the S&P than even Walmart, which employs 2.2 million people.
That's just amazing that Tesla's another one of those companies. It's value just keeps going up. People just keep pouring money in there, like there's no problem at all. But boy, you start looking around, and yeah, Tesla is got a bigger market cap than Walmart, and you know they have nowhere near the amount of economic activity and just payroll that Walmart generates. It's incredible.
Well, yeah, they are even larger than Sweden. Sweden generates $530 billion in GDP. Tesla's market cap is $550 billion. That's just an extra $20 billion. They are expected to finally produce about 500,000 cars this year. So valued on the per car basis, that's $1,100,000 per car.
Per car.
Per car.
I don't know what Tesla sells their cars for, but I don't think it's 1.1 million each. So that valuation has got to be a little out of whack. And it's just a matter of What do you believe? You know, do you believe that Elon Musk can grow into that, which is that's the bet you're making when you buy that stock right now? We think they're going to justify this over time. Right now, there's no way to look at it with any traditional metrics and say that value is probably a fair spot there. It's probably a good price. Just can't be. It's so overvalued for what they produce. But it's a bet on Elon Musk more than anything else right now.
Well, I saw him on an interview on TV this week. When we talk about modern portfolio theory is out of date.
Yes.
His comment was, he was asked about all the MBAs that run corporate America, and he said, that's a mistake. These guys are all just reading out of the book, and they're not innovative, and that's what makes a great company is you have to think outside the box. That's an old adage here, perhaps overused. But he's an innovator, and that's what you just said. That's what people are buying. It's innovation. And a lot of these other big companies are saying, but we own our share. We control this business until somebody comes along with a better product and knocks them off their pedestal like Bill Gates did with IBM. But one of the things that is a problem in Bank of Japan has been setting the standard for 99. And that is, they've been, if you can't get the stock price to go up, then the Bank of Japan buys stocks. And they are now the nation's largest holder of stocks, with total holdings over $400 billion. I think they own about 70% of the Nikkei index.
That is amazing. That's amazing that the state-run bank is the largest stockholder in the country.
So what do they do when the market collapses? Well, they're not going to sell. I mean, that would be self-defeating to sell their own stocks. And who are they going to sell them to? We're the Bank of Japan, and all you citizens out there, we think it's time to unload this. Somebody please step up and buy that.
They're going to have to find somebody to sell it to. That is a problem when you are the, I mean, they become the market, and now there's all kinds of questions being asked about pricing. I mean, how is there any real price discovery if a single bank owns most of the stock themselves and has said pretty much, well, they've never sold anything. They just buy it and hold it. So what does that do to the share values? And how do we get out of this situation? Thankfully, we're not there in the United States, but as we talked about the Fed over the last couple of weeks, the Fed has said, well, there's nothing that precludes us from buying equity ETFs either. We've been in the bond market. We can step into the stock market. We just haven't done that yet. And boy, I hope you don't go there. It really does cause a problem.
Well, the ECB is already addressing this issue, creating authorization, and the Fed does need some authorization to actually buy equities. But what you just said is they're considering it, and it looks like Congress is going to consent. Why let people suffer dealing with the truth of the financials markets? We want to protect them from that. After all, they don't know what they're doing. We in the government, we know what's best for everybody. We want you to stay home and just trade in your pajamas, and we'll send you some more money to do some more trading as soon as we can figure out where we're going to get. Oh, we don't have to worry about that. We'll just print it. That doesn't have any repercussions, does it? No, this makes all the sense in the world.
They're just canceling whole idea of free markets here. They're just canceling it. And said, well, we're just going to dominate this market, and we're going to take the risk out of it as much as we can, which means we're going to take the return out of it too. There's no way that those two things don't go hand in hand.
Well, and that's a major concern with prices at this level, is that everything that we look at for pricing at the current levels in the market means that the average return for the next 10 years is substantially below historic averages. If you go back to prior periods where the market was priced as on such extended earnings valuations, the next 10 years, rates of returns are extremely low. And if you've been on the last couple of webinars we've done, we've shown you that the average return in the stock market, even with the recent run-up this year, for the last two decades is just barely above 4% a year. It's not 9. And the odds are your portfolio model from your financial advisor or the website you use, it's built on a 9% assumption for stocks and about a 5.5% assumption for bonds, including the interest payments on the bonds and the increase in value because of falling interest rates. Falling interest rates make bonds very, very attractive. The opposite is true. Rising interest rates means bonds can become a disaster. We've been there before. Will we be there? I don't know. But do you have a process that actually addresses these dynamic issues in the market? That's why we don't use modern portfolio theory anymore, because it does not address them. It just says, just don't use your money and you live long enough and everything will be okay.
Ignore the market, ignore the changes, and just sit and take it. And you don't have to put up with that.
So you want to talk to us about that, you give us a call during the week at 800-317-9119. We will call you back and we can set up either a phone call appointment or an online appointment, and we can discuss these in greater detail. We can look at your portfolio and run some analysis on that and be able to share that with you, hopefully to reassure you, if not at least address the issues that are inherent in your current structure. Talk to us. 800-317-9119. Send us an email, help@irradio.com. If you miss our next show, we wish you a Merry, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. But God willing, we'll be back next week. Have a great weekend.